From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 16th day of August, 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's the Senior Grains Analyst at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. In agricultural news, U.S. regulators are planning a meeting Friday to discuss swaps and trades and how the CFTC will oversee those under its new authority granted by Washington, D.C. lawmakers and the president. And Russia has lifted its ban on U.S. poultry imports. Dave Dickey will have all the details of these stories later in the half hour. Also today, we'll preview the Pro Farmer Crop Tour. It's underway. We'll hear field reports all this week, and then on Friday, we'll talk with Chip Flory during Commodity Week, which you can hear anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org. And that's also a good place to listen to the farming world if you can't hear it on your radio station. It's the second half hour of our program. Our guest today, Bob Dunker. He'll have a preview of a different sort for us. Thursday is Agronomy Day here on the University of Illinois campus, and you're invited to tour the South Farms. Bob Dunker will tell us what you'll find. And don't forget, in just 26 minutes, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to Cooley at admworld.com.
In Chicago on a Monday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. Nearby September wheat at $6.63¾ cents, down 38¾ cents today. December at $6.96¼, down 38 cents. And next year's July soft red winter wheat settled $6.91, down 21 cents. Hard red in the September lead option, $6.88 from Kansas City, down 35½ cents. September corn at $4.07¼, down 4½. December at $4.22¾, 4½. Lower. March at $4.36¼, down 4¼, and the May corn at $4.43¼, down 4 cents. July 4½ lower at $4.49¼, and December at $4.36, down 7¼. September beans at $10.34, down 9½. November at $10.31½, 12½ lower. January at $10.37¾, down 12¾, and the March soybeans at $10.39¾, down 12 cents. And the bean meal September contract at $302.20 finished down 50 cents. This is the Closing Market Report. Soybean oil settled at $41.64, down $1.06 on the afternoon. Live cattle futures, August contract, $95.12½, 80 cents higher. August feeders at $112.70, up a buck, and the October lean hogs at $74.85, 20 cents higher on the day. And then when you turn your attention to the outside markets, crude oil futures settled at $75.14, down 25 cents on the afternoon, or rather 2½ cents on the afternoon. I take that back, down 25 cents on the afternoon. Ethanol at $1.77¾, 0.8 cents higher. Natural gas at $4.23¾, it was down 9¾ cents. And the heating oil at $1.98¾, down 8¾ cents for the day. August gold futures at $1,224.50, up $9.60. The Dow Jones Industrial Average down 30 points at 10,272. The U.S. dollar at 85.53, down 0.41. And the CRB index at 268.11, down 0.68 on the day. Here's what the weather forecast for the area looks like. For this afternoon, should be sunny, a high near 83. Really nice outside. Northwest winds around 8 miles an hour. Tonight, mostly clear, a low around 58. West-northwest winds around 5 miles an hour. And then it will calm down a bit. And then Tuesday, mostly sunny, with a high near 83 again. Calm winds becoming northeast around 6 miles an hour. Tuesday night, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, with a low around 63, east-northeast winds at about 7 miles an hour. And Wednesday, mostly cloudy, a high near 86, east-southeast winds between 5 and 7 miles an hour. Wednesday night, a low of 64. We'll have more complete details of the weather forecast for the agricultural growing regions of the world when we get to the bottom of this hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Hi, this is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. Join us this evening at New Ross United Methodist Church in New Ross, Indiana, for another one of our free AM 580 Agricultural Outlook panels. Tonight's meeting begins at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with a light dinner. The panel will follow immediately. Panelists for tonight's meeting include Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities, Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson Group, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, and Lee Goss of EFG in Chicago. That's at the New Ross United Methodist Church beginning this evening at 6 o'clock Eastern Time. No advance registration is required. The meeting is free, and we hope to see you there.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Monday afternoon. Kirk Kimmel with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, is here to take up the agricultural futures markets. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, a couple of things. I think ADM had a big meeting over the weekend. Did you learn anything?
Oh, boy, I came back with a whole wealth of information. They had some very sharp individuals there, and I did a lot of listening and a lot of note-taking. They covered a lot of ground, a lot of different subjects, you know, production to export capacity to the overall world population growth. It is very detailed, very informative, and anybody that works with ADMIS broker, you might well give them a call. They were probably there or got an email of what took place there, and a ton of trading and marketing ideas came up with, so that's what we look for is new, fresh ideas on what the market could do and new, fresh, innovative ideas on how to trade this market. And a lot of people there came away with that knowledge, Doug.
Yeah, did they foresee at that time the 30 or 40 cent drop in the wheat market today?
Well, if they did, I didn't get that email. I don't know why.
I kind of thought that was the case.
But basically, satellite imagery was projecting 158 bushels to the acre on corn yields, and asked the question, how high is high if we do see a corn yield of 158 bushels to the acre? And they said possibly $8 corn. And I think that's probably some of the momentum we saw this morning with ideas that we'd probably see some smaller yield expectations as we move along here due to the weather here over the last couple weeks that we've seen. To sort of top that pro farmer crop tour, the South Dakota early comments showed a little smaller corn crop. But later in the afternoon or late morning, the Ohio crop numbers were coming in a little better than expected. And I think that sort of maybe told the trade maybe enough is enough here for a while and look to see a little profit taking off for the run we saw here over the last week.
Yeah, so in the corn pit, we dropped 4 to 7 cents, depending on which contract you were looking at. December 11 was down 7 and a quarter. What do you think producers should be considering at this point? And I've got some follow-up questions in corn as we head into the harvest season, but we're really at that point where the bins are kind of pretty tight at this point.
Okay, my standard one-liner here, or two-liner, is got to determine whether you're a risk manager or a trader, because it's two separate scenarios, and things change in a hurry as a trader, whereas a producer, we try to think a little longer term.
Let's go as a producer.
Producer, basically looking long term in here, November beans at 1050 is about the highest price we've seen over the last 2 years. And same thing on the corn. As corn approaches this 450 area, we've got to keep in back of our mind, that's the highest price since the 2008 rally, about over the last 2 years. So we've got to continue to be a seller, a scale-up seller, and continue to market this crop as we move along, Todd.
All right. So my follow-up question is this on the corn. We know that last year's crop didn't come into the bins very well. We started talking and asking questions, I suppose, in January about whether we, even if we were at a carryover 1.6, whether that condition would be so bad that we might see a pop in the corn market, especially in basis. When you follow through with that, if we've got numbers from USDA at 165, and we've got a couple of 158s out there, one from the U of I, one from a satellite energy company, what do you do with that knowledge? I mean, do you look at it and say, well, 160, let's deal with the 165 on the USDA because that's the number that has to be dealt with, and then think about having a short supply in the nearby because not simply because of short supply, but because it's out of condition and can't be moved, and then think about how that deals with your new crop?
Well, as new crop goes along here, there hasn't been that push. There's some early harvest activity taking place, but there hasn't been that push to accumulate. Now, there is a few premium bids. The trade wants to move good quality corn to blend it off. China did receive, though, a cargo of corn, and they did make the observation that it wasn't, you know, the best corn they've seen, but they went ahead and took it. So that still suggests that, you know, there's a huge appetite for grain out there. So as we move along in here, basis has been widening out instead of firming up. So that urgency to get that new crop to blend off isn't there just yet.
Yeah, but then maybe I put it in different December to December. So we get a 422 and three quarters and a 436. Really don't have carry in the market for corn, or not very much if there is any. That generally tells producers to market sooner rather than later.
Correct. It depends on your own situation, especially on commercial storage. When there's not that carry there to pay for the commercial storage, we found it best to maybe go ahead and try to move it and then replace ownership on paper, sort of hedge it, then defend it. A guy's got an on-farm bin, you know, still going to look at, even if there's 5 cents spread there, that's carry, I'm going to fill that bin and try to capture that a little bit. But no, you're right.
Okay. Anything else I should add before you should add? I suppose I'm not going to add anything, but maybe you can before I let you go for the day.
Well, I'm just jealous that you guys get to talk to Chip here at the end of the week. I don't know why I did Commodity Week one week early, but that's always an event to try to be on, to visit with their observation. The news wires will be full tonight in the morning of their observations, what they've seen on their first day of the tour. Time.
It should be a very good show, and we'll have Chip on. You can always hear it online if you'd like. And, you know, if you come down, we'll put you in a seat, and we'll just have more the merrier. I know there are a couple of other analysts that want to do it, too. Maybe we could do an after-the-bell segment with you all.
I'll have to check, see who's there.
All right. Thanks much, Kurt.
Very good.
Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Monday afternoon.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Hey, if you're in the New Ross, Indiana area, don't forget about the Ag Outlook panel scheduled for the night at the Methodist Church there. Starts at 6 o'clock Eastern time, a little light dinner, and then at 6:45, the Outlook panel, including Chuck Shelby, Jackie Vakes, Wayne Nelson, and Lee Goss. It's, of course, open. All you have to do is drop by the New Ross Methodist Church in Indiana this evening.
In agricultural news, U.S. regulators say they will hold a public meeting in Washington on August 20th on governance and conflicts of interest in clearing and listing of swamps. Invited panelists will discuss the types of possible conflicts that could occur between banks and other major players in the swaps business and clearinghouses, swap execution facilities, and exchanges that trade swaps. The CFTC and SEC has the authority under the new Wall Street Reform Law passed last month to write regulations to prevent conflicts, including ownership and voting limits, rules for governance of clearinghouses, SEFs, and exchanges, and access requirements. Russia, the top market for U.S. chicken, is today lifting its ban on U.S. poultry imports. Russia, where U.S. poultry has been banned since January, will allow poultry imports from 68 U.S. plants out of a total of 87 proposed by the U.S. Russia banned the meat in January, saying a chlorine disinfectant used on the meat violated its food safety policy. A deal to restart shipments was reached in June. The U.S. shipped 733,000 tons of poultry meat to Russia worth $752 million in 2009. Last month was the second warmest July on record, and so far in 2010 remains on track to be the hottest year. Worldwide, the average temperature in July was 61.6 degrees Fahrenheit, that according to the National Climatic Data Center. Only July of 1998 was hotter since record-keeping began more than a century ago, and the January-July period was the warmest first 7 months of any year on record, averaging 58.1 degrees Fahrenheit. It was the hottest July on record for Delaware and Rhode Island, and every East Coast state from Maine to Florida ranked in its top 10 warmest. Only Montana, Idaho, and Texas had average temperatures that were below normal for the month. Sov Econ today says that the Russian grain crop may fall below 60 million tons this year, down 40% from 2009 because of a severe drought that has killed crops and reduced yields. Sov Econ has revised its 2010 grain crop forecast to 59.5 million to 63.5 million tons from its previous forecast of 70 to 75 million tons, which, if proves to be true, will be a 37% decline from the 97.1 million harvested in 2009. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey's Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report Commodity Week. And this week, the MC for Agronomy Day starts at 7 a.m. on Thursday, August 19th, runs until 2 o'clock. You're invited to come out. The program is free. I'll be dispatching wagons into the field. Those are the research fields where you can ask questions of all the scientists that are doing work on your behalf. If you get the opportunity, come and visit us here on the Urbana-Champaign campus. Agronomy Day is on the South Farms. That's just to the east of the Assembly Hall on St. Mary's Road, which is the road that runs just along the south edge of the Assembly Hall. Come and visit us for Agronomy Day 2010. Starts at 7 a.m. I'll have complete details during the Farming World this afternoon when we talk with Bob Dunker.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Up next, you know, it's a big week. State Fair in the state of Illinois is happening, and Agronomy Day on Thursday, and the Pro Farmer Scouts are out all week. We'll have an update of what they'll be looking for. The 2010 Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour is sponsored by Pioneer, and it's underway right now. Pro Farmer News editor Roger Bernard is along for the ride as the scout leader for the eastern leg of the tour. He describes what scouts will do on the tour.
Our scouts each have a predetermined route. They're stopping approximately every 15 to 20 miles on that route. They're gathering samples from a corn and a bean field. We're going into those cornfields. We're counting ears on corn plants. We're taking out 3 ears of corn. We're measuring grain length on those ears. We're measuring the number of kernel rows around those ears, and we're recording that data. We're using that then to come up with a yield calculation for that given field. When we go in those bean fields, we count the number of plants that are in 3 foot of row. We take out 3 plants. We count the number of pods and get an average pod count per plant. And that data then goes into the final number we put out here at Pro Farmer, and that's the number of pods in a 3 foot by 3 foot row.
Over the years, quite a bit of data has been collected by the Crop Tour Scouts, and when Bernard looks over the historical information, he says he sees why the tour is important.
This is not a windshield tour. We're getting out there, like I said, we're pulling data out of these fields. And when we look at our data on the tour, we only compare it to our data on the tour from prior years. We've been doing this tour now for 17 years, so we do have quite a body of data to work with. But when we talk about those pod counts in a 3 foot square and that corn yield number, we're talking about that compared to what we found on the tour last year or on, say, a three-year average. And that, again, gives us an idea. And a lot of what we're looking for here is direction. You know, is this up or down versus what we found on the tour last year?
Bernard says the key to the tour's usefulness is its consistency.
We're consistently random, I guess, would be a good way to put it, because we will pull out in that row that we finally measure on corn the 5th, 8th, and 11th year. That's so we pull the 5th, 8th, and 11th year. We don't try to pull the great big ones. We don't try to pull little bitty ones. We're out there trying to find a representative sample.
Making this tour seem like one big cornfield and bean field that stretches from Ohio through Illinois, Nebraska, and all the way to southern Minnesota. That area, by the way, produces roughly 70% of the nation's corn and soybeans.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Monday afternoon. Lisa Jones from the Andersons joins us here in Champaign County to talk about the cash grain market. Good afternoon to you, Lisa. How are you today? We've had a problem. She's there. I can hear her, but she can't hear me. They've had a problem with their system, so we won't bother with that. And we'll tell you that coming up in, well, just a bit, we'll talk with Bob Dunker from right here on campus about Agronomy Day. That will be Thursday of this week. Kicks off at 7 a.m. in the morning. Runs through 2 o'clock. Of course, I'll be there all morning long dispatching the wagons into the fields. Your opportunity to talk to the researchers directly about the kind of work they're doing for you. And I can tell you that because I work with them fairly, well, on a regular basis every day, that they're very glad to see you. And oftentimes they will get ideas about the research they'd like to do directly from you. So come out to Agronomy Day. It's this Thursday morning, starts at 7 o'clock, runs through 2 o'clock. Each of the tours takes about an hour to go through, and I'll be dispatching the wagons all morning long. The last one will leave somewhere between 11:30 and noon on Thursday morning of this week. Otherwise, you can always visit one other thing. Illinois Public Media and Dave Dickey, of course, heads out with ag panels on a fairly regular basis. And tonight, you can catch up with Dave and Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities and Jackie Vakes, Stuart Peterson, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities and Lee Goss of EFG. That's out of Chicago. They'll be in New Ross, Indiana at the United Methodist Church, 6 o'clock for a light dinner, then 6:45, these times, of course, Eastern. For the Ag Outlook panel, it's free, and you can walk in anytime you'd like. That at the New Methodist Church in New Ross, Indiana, this evening. Dave will be out on Wednesday night, too. He'll be in El Paso. Actually, on Wednesday night, he'll be in Shelbyville. He'll be in El Paso on Thursday night. Stay with us, and we'll give you more details on those. But they're always open, and you can always visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org to get all of the details about the Ag Outlook panels. If you're interested in going to one of those, just scroll down the page at willag.org and hit calendar, and you'll find all the details. So if you get the opportunity, run out and visit Dave tonight. He'll be in Newmarket, and then on Wednesday night in Shelbyville, and on Thursday evening, he'll be in El Paso, Illinois. More in 2 minutes when we take a look at the agricultural weather forecast.
It's National Rum Day. The origins of rum date back to antiquity. Fermented drinks produced from sugarcane may have first occurred in either ancient India or China. The first distillation of rum took place on sugarcane plantations in the Caribbean in the 17th century. On this day in agricultural history in 1888, John Pemberton died. Pemberton was the pharmacist who invented Coca-Cola in 1885. At first, it was a tonic, French wine cola. Later, he modified the formula by omitting the alcohol and adding other vegetable essences. The new syrup was meant to be a cure for headaches. Pemberton sold the recipe, equipment, and machinery to manufacture the drink for just $1,200. In 1899, Robert Bunsen died, a German chemist. He discovered each element emits a light of characteristic wavelength. He also made a number of improvements in chemical batteries. In 1904, Wendell Stanley was born. A Spanish-American biochemist, he shared the 1946 Nobel Prize for Chemistry for his work in the purification and crystallization of viruses. And in 1973, Selman Waksman died, an American biochemist. He was one of the world's foremost authorities on soil microbiology. He discovered the antibiotic streptomycin, the first specific antibiotic effective against tuberculosis. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Monday afternoon. Josh Darr of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois, is on the phone line with us today to take up the agricultural weather forecast. Josh, it is just magnificent, and I suppose it's supposed to stay that way.
Yeah, we have a great week on tap, and the first Canadian air mass, if you will, of the autumn season, if we can say that, here in the middle of August, has come through the area. And obviously, in mid-August, we don't have that significant of a cold punch with it, but this was a massive change in dew points when this front came through over the weekend. And we're sitting here today, dew points in and around the lower 50s, relative humidity meaning in about 30% range, and it feels great out there, northwest flow. And we have not seen this in many weeks this summer. It's we've been in that humid, southerly flow air mass for the majority of the summer, and we stay in this air mass here through the better portion of the week. We do start to increase temperatures again and get our nighttime mins up by later in the week. Here to start the week, mins tonight could be even in the upper 50s across some areas. We bring mins back up near 70 in central Illinois, for example, by late this week, and highs back up into the upper 80s. But next couple days are just going to be gorgeous around the belt.
You know, Bob Dunker oversees the research farm here and was telling me, we'll talk to him in just a bit on the Farming World about Agronomy Day coming up Thursday, but was telling me that there were an awful lot of days that were over 90 degrees in the month of August in the Midwest, and that here in Urbana, he's only had 7/10 of an inch so far this month on the South Farms, those research farms. Will we get any more rainfall in the next week or so?
Well, that's a great point, Todd. There are portions in central and east central Illinois that are certainly below normal in the past 30 days. We have a very slight rainfall chance Tuesday night, Wednesday. It does not look like anything meaningful, and it looks like most of that rainfall will dry up across Missouri before it crosses into Illinois. The next rainfall chance after that's not until the weekend, and even that would not be generally a widespread heavy producer across Illinois and into the eastern belt, which has shown a drier bias here this summer. So, you know, it's very likely we get to the end of August and those precip deficits will be more than less than they are sitting here today.
And then you better turn your attention to Russia for me. It made a lot of headlines, though. The steam seems to have run out of that one. I suspect the drought is still in place. And can you tell me about the spring wheat growing regions, which be farther north than the hard red winter wheat areas, which have had the drought?
Yeah, good questions, Todd. The temperatures certainly are coming off from the extreme levels they've seen. Now, normal high in Moscow this time of year is in the 60s. They're still seeing highs in the 80s, so they're generally 20 degrees above normal still this week. So the massive heat of upper 90s is off, but not that other heat that's still in place. From a precip standpoint, still to us it looks dry through the back half of August, and that's in the core hard red belt. Now you go north, you go east to the spring wheat belt producing areas of Kazakhstan and more the northern belts of Russia, and they're getting some rainfall here in the next 10, 12 days, so better conditions there.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
Okay, thanks, Todd.
Yeah, all right, bye-bye. And that is Josh Darr. He's with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. Happens each and every Monday afternoon. Coming up in a moment, the Farming World. Don't forget, if you're near New Ross, Indiana, this evening at 6:45. You can drop in on that Outlook panel at the Methodist Church. I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to The Farming World from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. On the studio with us, actually, is Bob Dunker. He takes care of the research farm. We call that the South Farm, so that's not officially the title of the research farm. Most people would know it as that. And we'll be overseeing not only that particular research farm and many of the other research farms around the state, but also Agronomy Day this year, which is Thursday, the 19th of the month. That happens to be this Thursday. Bob, thanks for coming into the studio with us today.
Yeah, good afternoon, Todd. It's good to be with you.
All right. Well, tell me about not the South Farms, but Agronomy Day and what it is and what it's like. This is, I think, the 54th.
So 54th annual Agronomy Day.
And it's the 54th consecutive one, right?
That is correct. 1957 was the first year Agronomy Day was held, and we've had Agronomy Day every year since. So we're really looking forward to putting on a good show on Thursday. And, you know, Agronomy Day gives us the opportunity for our faculty and our researchers to discuss their latest research findings with all of our clientele from Illinois. And you don't necessarily have to be a farmer or even in agriculture to attend. We welcome anyone who has an interest in what our college is doing. And I think you find some things that would be interesting that you may have not known before you came. So anyway, it's open to anyone, and it involves all the departments in our college, so you'll have an opportunity to interact with not only the crops people, agronomists, but also other peoples in other departments.
If they come out this year and things kick off, I think, at 7 a.m. in the morning, what will they find?
Well, they'll find when they come in the front gate, and we're located just south of St. Mary's Road on South Wright Street, and there should be signs to direct you there if you haven't been there. And when you park, you'll get a registration card. There is no cost for registration. We ask that you do register so we can keep track of our numbers. But there'll be a large tent, and also from there we will dispatch our tours.
And what can we find on the tours this year?
Well, we have four tours, and we think we are pretty strong in production aspects this year. We have tour topics covering plant breeding and genetics, both traditional and molecular techniques, weed management, pest management, plant diseases, maximizing yield, bioenergy crops, and bioenergy issues.
You know the fields fairly well. What do they look like, and what interests you most out of the tours?
Well, there's always the up-to-date new production techniques, you know, continually changes in entomology and weed science as far as, you know, herbicide-resistant crops. But, the bioenergy aspect, of course, is a new, kind of relatively new technology. We have a very strong program in the college. We have the large energy farm now that's located away from South Farm. But those who come will also have an opportunity, I think, in the afternoon to visit the bioenergy farm if they so wish.
So, and that's does that go at 2 o'clock? Is there a bus going from Agronomy Day out there, or do you make the trip, or do you know?
I do not know. I think there'll be information available at the registration tent. If people come there, we'll let them know.
Right. So they'll go to the further south farms, I suppose. That's what I kind of talked to them about it. But this is the energy farm, and they could take a tour of that. And then on the production side, those four tours go out. They all take just about an hour, and they'll make several stops on each of them, right?
Right. We have 21 stops. One of the tour has six different tour stops. And they do take a little bit of over an hour, and so if you want to see all four of them before lunch, you kind of need to get there at 7 o'clock. We do have some tours that are kind of self-guided, so to speak. We have one walking tour, and the others we do run out of wagons that we take them to the starting point, and they go from there. So they'll have an opportunity to see any and all that they want.
Continuing education units are available for each of these tours, and that you might explain what those are. Those who need them will know what they are, but they are available.
Right. The continuing education units support the programs the certified crop advisor program, certified professional agronomist, those certifications that professionals obtain that are in the consulting or in the agribusiness world. And so each one of these tours will have certain credits that they can earn toward that certification.
Then let's talk a bit more about really how things take place. I come out and host or MC for a good portion of the morning. I try to talk for about 4 or 5 hours, I suppose, to the crowd that's there, a few minutes at a time, because they show up and they go back in and out on those wagons and take their hour tours. By the time they get done with the morning, they've had a full lineup of research and tours, but they're not done yet, because usually for a nominal fee, and I suspect that's the case this year, there is a lunch and there's a noon hour program too. And we're lucky enough, and have been for many years, to have lots of important folks to come out and talk to. And this year there are lots. It may be more important than ever, I suppose.
Yeah, that's right. As far as lunch, we do have lunch available for a small cost. It will be catered by Hickory River Smokehouse, and good food if you've never had it, but it's a real good meal. And then at our noon program, we have some special guests that we think will be very interesting. Not only will Chancellor Robert Easter, who is a former dean of our college, will be there to address a group. My Department of Crop Sciences, we have a new department head, Dr. Ramon Bolero. So some of those of you who have not met him will have an opportunity to do so. But we also have our current dean, Robert Hauser, will address the group. And special guest, I guess, is our new University of Illinois president, Dr. Michael Hogan, will be there to address the crowd during the noon hour.
And it'll be important. So if you have not had the opportunity to hear Dr. Hogan speak, you can come out. Even if you just come out for that at the noon hour, you could do that if you'd like. And eat lunch. It's a good meal, and you could come out. It's not much of a cost. And that all happens on Thursday of this week. So let's turn our attention to a couple of other places. That's Agronomy Day, and everybody's invited. It's free if you want to come out. Tours take about an hour. There are four of them. You want to get there as early as possible. Open the gates at 7 a.m. We'll all be there, and you're all invited. Tell me about the South Farms and the research that you do. How long have you been overseeing the South Farms?
Well, I took over as superintendent of the South Farms in 1995, followed Gene Oldham. Many of you knew him. He was a farm manager there for 29 years. And so I moved in that position from doing work on other projects within the university. And it's been a very rewarding and challenging job. I really enjoy working with the research and faculty and the students. So it's been a very good career.
What makes up those farms, and how many fields and kinds of activities are happening, and what happens in the winter months and in the summer months? And you're busy, I think, year-round.
Yeah, that's I always get the question, well, what do you do in the winter? And, you know, we're just as busy in the winter as we are in the summer. And, you know, our facility, the Crop Sciences Park, Crop Sciences Research and Education Center, is about 1,300 acres, and we essentially have acreage from St. Mary's Road on the north, south to Airport Road along First Street. And the university in general, the college, has several thousand acres, both in crops, animals, you know, bioengineering, forestry, horticulture. And new this year to our department is that the horticulture faculty are now part of the Department of Crop Sciences. And so we also have those faculty and researchers involved in our unit.
And so since they're new, how do you incorporate and what do you have that's new on the farm?
Well, it's not so much what we have new, but we've incorporated their resources. Horticulture has always had a field research program, and their faculty have been involved in that. So we're just kind of integrating management. We still have the same personnel that we have, but we have new faculty that we work with, cross-disciplinary kind of projects. And so we're looking forward into getting to know what they do a little bit more and it's been good this first year.
Yeah, just as a reference, and of course horticulture has been part of the college forever and a day, but the green industry in itself was at one point and still may be one of the fastest growing industries in the state of Illinois, and I think it also had one of the largest income centers in the state of Illinois. So the green industry would make would be flowers, it would be anything that you might go in, vegetable crops, all those sorts of things and trees are part of the green industry, a really wonderful industry. I made a trip several years ago to the northern end of the state, what I would call the northern end of the state. It was actually just up near La Salle, Peru. And we stopped by one of the largest greenhouses in the nation. And about this time of year, I suppose, they're getting ready to do their Christmas types of programs. And I think they had a million poinsettias in the greenhouses at that point. So it's a big thing, and it's really kind of important, and important about a part of Illinois agriculture, too.
Right. You know, our horticulture program is also very diverse. We have turf.
Turf grass management.
Turf grass management, entomology, pathology, fruits, vegetables, pumpkins, a lot of crops that people aren't aware of that are very important to Illinois agriculture.
And they're all part of that, and it's a big part of agriculture. So let's talk about the kinds of things that are happening on the farm, and maybe you can talk about conditions on the farm. I mentioned those in our weather segment, that it's been awful hot and awful dry in the month of August. What do you see?
Well, I'm not sure what normal is anymore. I mean, you travel this state, and I grew up in the western part of the state, and they've had considerably large amounts of rain that's really been an impact on them. Here in our center, we've only had 7/10 of an inch of rain this month of August. And 10 of the 15 days so far, 16 days, have been above 90 degrees. So it has put considerable stress on the corn crop. And our early planted stuff, I do see where we have some kernel abortion there on the tips of the ears. I don't know what the overall impact will be, but we've definitely had some stress conditions this past 2 weeks.
And would you normally see... When would you see that? I mean, under research conditions, and I guess maybe I should ask, do you have full fields and the small research conditions both?
Right. We both have what we call rotational acreage. When you have a large research farm, you usually uniform crop part of it so that when experiments rotate into that, then you've had a uniform crop. So we have kind of a commercial kind of production situation as well as small plot research. So... you know, we kind of get involved in both sides as far as management.
I guess it's probably one of the best scouted fields and places on the planet, I would think.
Well, I will say this, that if a faculty person or researcher sees something wrong with his field, I will hear about it right away. So,
I was booking the program for Wednesday, and we're going to talk to one of the people that it will be speaking at Agronomy Day, Joe Spencer. And I said, you might be on with him, but I wasn't quite sure, and you're here today. And he said, oh, I'll have to be on good behavior, because he knew you had all the power over his facilities. So thank you much, and we'll talk with you in just another minute here. We'll take up maybe the moral plots at that point.
Learnard Seed Service supports agricultural programs as an additional service to its customers. Learnard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids, to farmers throughout East Central Illinois. Learnard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
The Farming World is a production of Illinois Public Media. If you have comments or suggestions, please do email us. You can do that by sending an email to... Will Ag Staff at Illinois.edu. That's W-I-L-L Ag Staff at Illinois.edu. Back in 2 minutes.
This is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming Dave Dickey. In business news, China reduced its holdings of U.S. Treasury debt for a second straight month in June, while the holdings of Japan and Britain rose. The Treasury Department says that China's holdings fell by $24 billion to $843.7 billion, a decline of 2.7%. Total foreign holdings of Treasury securities rose $45.6 billion to a total of $4 trillion, an increase of 1.2%. With the federal government running record deficits, the debt figures are being closely watched to see whether foreign demand keeps pace with the country's rising need to borrow. Japan's second quarter GDP was less than China's before seasonal adjustments, government data showed today, underscoring expectations that China will overtake Japan as the world's second largest economy this year. Japan's second quarter unadjusted GDP totaled $1.2883 trillion on a nominal dollar basis against China's second quarter unadjusted GDP of $1.3369 trillion, that according to estimates by Japan's Cabinet Office. And home improvement retailer Lowe's says its profit rose 10% in the second quarter. The company says net income rose to $832 million, or 58 cents per share, in the quarter that ended on July 30th. That's up from $759 million, or 51 cents per share, a year earlier. And that's a look at today's business news.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
This is the Farming World News and Information from the Land Grant in Urbana-Champaign. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Bob Dunker is with us this afternoon. He oversees the research facilities for the farms here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. And one other item, too, that is among that acreage is one of the world's oldest research plots. We call it the Morrill Farm, Morrill Plots, and it's located dead in the center of campus, isn't it, Bob?
Yes, it is, Todd. That's quite an opportunity to be able to do that, but also a challenge to have agricultural research plots right in the middle of a very busy campus.
For alums and those who are used to coming to campus, they've no doubt heard the farms. You can't throw shade on the corn, and you can't throw shade on the corn because it's a research plot.
Yeah, that's right. You know, the story about the undergraduate library is the fact that it's actually built underground rather than above ground to reduce any impact of shade on the Morrill plots. And we've had other buildings in campus, the new energy building to the
the brand new IGB
building, also the the sight line as far as sunlight on that was also taken into consideration to not have any negative impact on the plots.
Well, why is it important to have the plots there?
Well, you know, it really is a historical continuum, kind of a living museum. You know, it was established in 1876, and it's the longest continuous research plot in America, and actually has the longest continuous corn plot in the world that has been documented. And over the series of that time, it's been pretty much managed very similar as far as rotational scheme and looking at the effects of both fertilizer and crop rotation on soil quality. Originally there were 10 plots in the Morrill plots, and now there actually are three, plots 3, 4, and 5, and plot 3 has been in continuous corn since 1876, and plot 4 has been in a two-year rotation from 1876 until 1967, was in a corn oats rotation, and then soybeans were swapped out for oats after that period to more closely reflect what our typical agriculture is for this day. And plot 5 has always been in a three-year rotation. It still has oats. It's a corn oats alfalfa rotation, and so that's our three-year rotation.
And last year was kind of a dot on the chart rotation because everything was in corn?
Yeah, that's correct. You know, only every 6 years, because of the way the rotations occur, is it in continuous corn. And that's when we can actually measure the responses of the different treatments because we have a uniform crop. And so, you know, we'll have to wait another 6 years in order to measure that again. So it's been very interesting.
What have the long-term effects look like on the corn after corn on each of the plots, you know, roughly speaking?
Well, in general, when we do have it all in corn, and within each main rotation, we have subplots, whether they get inorganic fertilizer, whether they get manure, or whether they don't get any fertilizer. We've had some plots that have never had any fertility since the inception of the plots. And what we've normally seen is that the continuous corn plots generally are the lowest in yield in most years across average of a long period of time. And then comes the two-year rotation, and the three-year rotation, when it finally goes into corn, usually is the highest yield of those three rotational treatments. Now, that is in general for the whole main plot, but in subplots where we have fertilizer, those differences aren't always that dramatic as the no-fertilized plots.
And there's, I think, a plot that has only had manure on it. Is that right?
Well, the one series of plots has only had manure as far as a nitrogen source. There's other plots that have had phosphorus put on, either bone phosphate or rock phosphate as part of the treatment. But we do have an area that only gets manure as far as any kind of nitrogen source for the crop.
How's it hold up?
You know, it does pretty well. The long-term average isn't as high as with the natural inorganic fertilizer, but in the three-year rotation, the manure plots are pretty equivalent to what we get on the inorganic fertilizer.
Okay, let's come back to the subject at hand and remind folks that they can come out on Thursday morning of this week and see you. They can see me, too, all at Agronomy Day. Starts at 7 a.m.?
7 a.m.
And so they need to be there. Well, they don't have to be there at 7, but if they want to take all four tours, it's best to arrive early, right?
Right. You can actually come anytime you want. You can just come out, and we do have a lot of exhibits in the tents. Other departments and other researchers in the college may have a poster display or some other sort of display in the tent. So if you don't want to go on the field tours, you can at least come out and see the exhibits in the tent.
Bob, thanks so much. Bob Dunker is overseeing the research farms here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, and Agronomy Day kicks off at 7 a.m. Thursday morning this week. We hope to see you there if you get the opportunity. I'll be there all morning long, and then, of course, back here in the chair for the closing market report on Thursday afternoon. You've been listening to The Farming World from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.